You know, you were just mentioning about the Nova exhibit that they have in the city and how many people have gone to see it. I think it's probably very important that we all take time to make sure that we understand what it is that happened. And that won't be able to give us a full perspective, but at least for those who have not yet been in Eretz Yisrael since October 7th, it could definitely give some kind of perspective as to what went on October 7th. Putting that aside, we also have this coming Sunday night is the commemoration that many communities have of Yom HaShoah. So I thought that there would be an opportunity for us to talk a little bit today about the whole concept of Kiddush Hashem and Mesiras Nefesh. So somebody mentioned to me on the last day of Yom Tov when we said Yizkor, we were outside in the hallway, and for those who have the opportunity to go out for Yizkor because their parents are still alive, halavai, we should have the opportunity to do so for many, many happy and healthy years. So somebody in the hallway was talking to me about how he felt very uncomfortable when we talk about the kedoshim. We make, in our shul, we make certain kelmales that everybody responds to, that everybody stays in for. We make for different groups of kedoshim. We make for the kedoshim of the Shoah. We make for the kedoshim who perished fighting on behalf of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. And then this year, they added another kelmale, which was in memory of all of the victims of the massacre on October 7th. And the question that he asked me was, who said that they are considered to be kedoshim? Which sounds like a very insensitive question. And I said to him, what do you mean? What he said was, these are, for the most part, people who are mechalalei Shabbos, people who are not shomrei Torah mitzvos, people who were not really God-fearing Jews during the regular course of their lives. And then suddenly do you say that the last moment of their lives, if they're killed because they're Jewish or because they live in Israel, suddenly they flip to become kedoshim, and suddenly they become b'nei olam haba, even though they did everything in their lives that is against olam haba. So how do you understand that? It happens to be, it's a really important question. And it's a question that comes up not only now, it was a question that was discussed after the Shoah as well. And I think it's worthwhile to just have a little bit of perspective to understand what this is all about. So let's begin with the following. We know that Mesiras Nefesh is something that has been a very important foundational part of the Jewish people since our inception. Avraham Avinu was Moser Nefesh. As we know, he allowed himself, the Medrash says, to be thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh, even though the Torah itself does not mention that. But we have Midrashim that tell us that Avraham Avinu was prepared to do that al Kiddush Hashem. And of course we know as well that Avraham Avinu was prepared to be makriv his own son, Yitzchak Avinu, as a karban. He was willing to give up his own son, and he was not concerned about the fact that it was his child, or that he had his own emotions involved, or that he wanted to protect his child. If this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to do, Avraham Avinu was comfortable doing that, even though it was incredibly difficult for him to do so. The Psukim in Sefer Daniel tell us the story about Hananiah, Mishael, va'Azariah, three of the great personalities there in the Navi, where Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Babel, had tried to force them to bow down to a pesel, to an idol. And Hananiah, Mishael, va'Azariah responded to Nebuchadnezzar, knowing that they were endangering their own lives by responding this way. They responded and they said that they are not prepared to bow down to the pesel, they're not prepared to bow down to the idol. And Nebuchadnezzar then decided to throw them into a Kivshan Ha'esh, and they were miraculously survived. Somehow they got out of it by miracle, but they didn't know that that was going to happen. Hananiah, Mishael, va'Azariah were prepared to throw themselves into that fire and to give up their lives. We know that there's a story about Daniel, Begov Ha'arayos. Daniel had a very similar story that Daryavish had wanted that he should consider, all the citizens of the land should consider Daryavish to be the king, and they should all treat him like a god. And Daniel was not prepared to do that, and as a result, the punishment he was given was he was thrown into a Gov Ha'arayos. He was thrown into a lion's den. Very, very serious consequence for what he had done. But Daniel was prepared to do that. Now again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to survive miraculously, but that was not what Daniel thought going in. He assumed that he was giving up his life al Kiddush Hashem. So this is something that throughout Tanakh and throughout, of course, all the millennia of Jewish history, we have encountered many, many different times. And the question then becomes, how do we understand this? What is the story with those who give up their lives al Kiddush Hashem? In fact, in Parshas Va'era, the Torah tells us that one of the makos, the second makos, was Makas Tzvardeya. And in Makas Tzvardeya, the Torah says that the Tzvardim were given an instruction that they had to go into the homes They had to go onto the beds, and they had to go into the tanurim, into the ovens. So the Gemara says, if I was at Tzfardeya, I would say, look, let me take the easier job and go onto the bed. Why should I go into a burning hot oven? If I go into the oven, I'm going to die. So says the Gemara, we learn from there that you see that Kiddush Hashem, they were willing to give up their lives al Kiddush Hashem, the Tzfardeya, the crickets, the whatever they were, the frogs, were willing to jump into the ovens, and they were not afraid. And they didn't say, oh, let me just make sure that I go into the safe places where I'm not going to be harmed. If this is what the Ribono Shel Olam expected of them, this is what they did. And there are so many unfortunate and terrible stories over the many millennia of Jewish history that talk about experiences like these, about those who are Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. One particularly difficult one to read is the Rishonim have a whole discussion about parents in the, I forgot exactly which iteration of the terrible massacres it was. But the Bali Atosis write about, maybe it was by the Spanish Inquisition, but I think it was before that. I think it was by the Crusades, if I'm not mistaken. So the Rishonim, the Bali Atosis write about how they witnessed how parents would shecht their own children. Parents would kill their own kids because they were concerned that if our children are going to be taken hostage by the enemy, they're going to no longer be affiliated with Judaism, which probably was a safe assumption. And they said, we would rather our children not be put into that nisayon. We don't want our children to be put into that test. And we would rather kill our children before they are put into that terrible predicament. And there was a major discussion among the Rishonim whether what people were doing was correct. Were people allowed to actually kill their children? Or would you say that these parents are murderers? Are they giving their children an opportunity to get into Olam Haba as Kedoshim? Or are they actually stopping the lives of their children and they should be deemed as Rotzlim? And some parents even said they made a bracha, Sher Kedushanu Matzosa V'Tzivanu Al Hashchita. It's a harrowing account that is mentioned in the Bali Atosis, but you see that over the many, many millennia of Jewish history, this has unfortunately come up many, many times before. It's well known that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, who was killed in the Shoah together with his Talmidim, Rabbi Chanan turned to his Talmidim before they all knew that they were about to be killed. So right beforehand, Rabbi Chanan said to them, you know that we are all going to become karbanos. We are all going to be those who are giving ourselves al Kiddush Hashem. And he said, just like it says by a karban, that a machshava is posel. It says that when you offer a karban, if you have the wrong thoughts, that would invalidate your karban from being accepted. So too he said, nobody here should have any machshavas psulas. All of us should be pure. All of us should know exactly what we're doing. And all of us should be proud that we are willing to give our lives al Kiddush Hashem. What I find very confusing, I don't have an answer, but I'm just going to mention the confusion for me, and I'm sure there's a good answer. I don't know how to formulate it. We say that when someone dies, for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we refer to it as a, what? Kiddush Hashem, right? It's a Kiddush Hashem. You're a Mekadesh Shem Shamayim. Okay. At the same time, we find throughout Chumash and in Tanakh, you find references that when something bad happens, it is considered to be a chilul Hashem. So, for example, we say it in Hallel, it's a pasuk in Tehillim. Lama yomru hagoyim ayei Eloheim. The nations of the world ask, how could it be that God allows for the Jewish people to suffer so much? If He really cares about them, if He really loves them, if He really appreciates them, He wouldn't allow for all this tragedy to unfold. That, to me, right, is obviously a chilul Hashem. Meaning the nations of the world say, God's name is desecrated. We don't understand how God can do this to His people. Obviously, He's not a powerful God, or His people are not the chosen people, whatever the conclusion is, but these are questions that are asked. In Parshas Nitzavim, the Torah talks about it as well. V'amru kalagayim, and the nations of the world will see all of the destruction that befalls the Jewish people, and they will say, Almeh asa Hashem kacha la'aretz hazos. They're going to say, why is the Ribono Shel Olam so angry at the Jewish people? Lama yomru Mitzrayim, bera hutziyam naharogo sam beharim, ulechalo sam me'al pneha adama. That's a pasuk in Parshas Kisisa, where the Torah says, the nations of the world, and Mitzrayim in particular, are going to say, I don't understand. You took the Jews out of Egypt, sounds wonderful, but then you brought them here, lechalo sam me'al pneha adama, you brought them here to just kill all of them? What kind of God is this? To make it even more explicit, the Navi Yechezkel, when he is prophesizing about the Churban Beis Hamikdash and about the Galus that is going to follow, So the Navi Yechezkel, you can look it up later. It's in Perek Lamed Vav. It's a number of psukim there, but it's in the middle of Perek Lamed Vav. Unbelievable what he says. Va'afitz osam bagoyim. He says, I'm going to scatter the Jewish people around the world in different communities. V'yizaru ba'artzos kedarkam uchali losam shefatetim. Vayavo el hagoyim asher ba'u sham. And they came to those communities where they were sentenced to be in exile. Vayichalalu eshem kodshi. And they made a chilul Hashem. How'd they make a chilul Hashem? You, God, sent us into galus. What did we do wrong? What's the chilul Hashem that is involved in my being sent there? Be'emor lohem, says the Navi Yechezkel. Am Hashem eilo me'artzo yatzo, says the Navi Yechezkel. That is the chilul Hashem. That people will say, Am Hashem eilo me'artzo yatzo. This is the nation of Hashem. And they have come out from his land. And because that is their conclusion, that this is the nation of Hashem, and they have come out from his land, that, says the Navi Yechezkel, is itself the Chilul Hashem. How could it be that the Ribono Shel Olam allows this to happen? So I find it somewhat paradoxical that, on the one hand, we say somebody who gives his life, or who dies because of the Ribono Shel Olam, or because he's a Jew, we say that person is considered a Kiddush Hashem. He died al Kiddush Hashem. While at the same time, when terrible things happen to the Jewish people, we refer to it as a chilul Hashem. So it's like a little bit interesting. I know that it's not really a question, but it's just an interesting paradox. No? Nobody seems very fazed by my point, but I think it's interesting. Okay. So what is the source in the Gemara for Kiddush Hashem? Let's begin. Very often when we're in grade school, they talk about you know, make sure not to make a chilul Hashem when you go out into the street and before we go on a trip, and this is how we have to behave. The truth is, although that is very important, when you go back to the original pasuk, what does the pasuk say in Chumash? Anybody know? What is the source of a Kiddush Hashem versus a chilul Hashem? The source is where the Torah says, V'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael, which means our primary responsibility is to make a Kiddush Hashem, b'soch b'nei Yisrael, by the way in which we behave, by the way in which we lead our lives, showing people that we lead upstanding and honest lifestyles. That is the Kiddush Hashem, b'soch b'nei Yisrael. Outside of that, there's a secondary obligation to make sure that when we go out into the street, we do the same. But the way the Torah originally formulates the mitzvah is v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. And although Mesiras Nefesh and Kiddush Hashem is something that has been a part of the fabric of the Jewish people for so many millennia, we know, of course, that the most important Jewish value is to live al Kiddush Hashem. We know that we would do anything in the world for Jewish life to be sustained. We know that we would even be Mechal Shabbos, we would violate Yom Kippur, we would violate everything in the world in order for a person to be able to continue to have the opportunity to live a Jewish life, which means that is more valuable than something that is going to end al Kiddush Hashem. So that is important for us to remember, that that is our challenge, and that is what is so important for us to think about all the time as we journey through the different experiences of our lives. That Kiddush Hashem, in its fullest sense, is b'soch b'nei Yisrael, is in the way in which we live our lives, not in the way in which we end our lives. And there's a very interesting medrash by Avraham Avinu. Where does it say Lech Lecha by Avraham Avinu? Anybody know? So one of them is obvious. Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha la'aretz asher arecha. It says that Avraham Avinu should leave his father's home and he should go to the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show him. What's the other place where we're told in Chumash by Avraham Avinu lech lecha? By the Akedah. It says that Avraham Avinu should leave his home with his child Yitzchak, who he loves so much, and v'haleu sham li'ola, and you should bring him up there as a karban. You should bring him up as an offering to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those are the two Lech Lechas. Says the Medrash, either in Parshas Lech Lecha or Vayera, I don't remember where, but in the beginning of one of those Parshios, the Medrash says, I don't know which of the two Lech Lechas is more valuable. Really? You don't know which of the two Lech Lechas is more valuable? Don't you know that for the last few thousand years, we've been talking about the fact that Avraham Avinu performed the Akedah, that Avraham Avinu was prepared to do that act of Mesiras Nefesh? So what do you mean you don't know which Lech Lecha is more valuable in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Well, of course, the Akedah is the climax, is the highlight, is the pinnacle of Avraham Avinu's life. So what do we mean that the other Lech Lecha even comes into the same category? It's nothing similar at all. And the answer to that is, I believe, that there are two different Lech Lechas in the life of Avraham Avinu. One was the Kiddush Hashem of when he was willing to give Yitzchak as an Ola Tamima, when he was willing to follow the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and bring his child as a Karban on a Mizbeach. That is a one-moment act, but it's over. You do it and it's over. I'm not minimizing, Chalila, what Avraham Avinu was willing to do. It's tremendous, and it's something we still talk about. But when you think about, in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is more valuable? The act of one moment of Kiddush Hashem, or the act of Avraham Avinu's first Lech Lecha, which was what? Lech Lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha la'aretz asher areka. Give up everything that you valued before. Give up the home that you come from. All the values you were raised on. Everything you're familiar with. And go to the land that will show you and recreate your life and live life in a different way. And for every waking moment of your life, you are going to be challenged whether you can follow these morals and these values that a Jew is supposed to live by. That perhaps is even more difficult, says the Medrash, than the second Lech Lecha in Avraham Avinu's life. The second one was he had to overcome one tremendous moment of anxiety, one unbelievable moment which was so emotionally charged and so difficult for a parent to be able to do. But more difficult than that, perhaps, is a Jew for every waking moment of his or her life to understand, I have a tafkid, I have a way in which I need to live life. There is an expectation of how I think, of how I behave, of how I relate to people, of how I interact, of everything that I do, what I eat, what I don't eat, what I wear, what I don't wear, what I look at, what I don't look at. All of this is an ongoing challenge, and that perhaps is the real Kiddush Hashem, the real Mesiras Nefesh, for a person to live life that way, and not just to live with one moment of a Kiddush Hashem like we find by the Akedah. So, what is the source for all of this? As we said, the Torah says, V'nikdashti b'soth b'nei Yisrael. That is the pasuk. However, the Gemara then discusses it in Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Dalet. The Gemara expands a little bit upon this idea. And we have the Gemara here as follows. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehud Sada. Nimnu v'gamru ba'aliyas beis nitzeh b'luz. The Chachamim were having a discussion in this community, and they came to the conclusion. Kol aver shabbat Torah, when it comes to any of the prohibitions in the Torah, im omrim la'adam alvor ve'al teharek, if somebody will be told, alvor ve'al teharek, either violate this avera, or I will kill you, says the Gemara, yavor ve'al yeharek. You have to make sure to violate the avera, and don't give up your life. Except for the following three cardinal sins, which are Avodas Kochavim, Gili Arayos, and Shvichas Damim. That means, if somebody comes to me and says, either serve Avodah Zarah or I'm going to take your life, I have to be willing to give up my life. If somebody says, violate Gili Arayos or I'm going to take your life, you have to be willing to give up your life. And similarly, Shvichas Damim. And the Gemara gets into a whole discussion here. You can read it on your own. For each of these three, why are they considered to be an exception to the rule? Why is the rule that normally we say, Yavar ve'al yehareg, normally we say, violate the Aveira and don't give your life up, whereas by these three, we would make a notable exception and tell people that they have an obligation to give up their lives. If you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, Perakei, the Rambam here that I brought draws the distinction between these three and all of the other mitzvahs, as the Gemara tells us. Says the Rambam, Kol beis Yisrael mitzuvin al kiddush Hashem hagadol hazeh. Says the Rambam, every Jew has an obligation to make sure to make a kiddush Hashem, as it says, v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. Kisheyamo goy, v'yamo says Yisrael. And therefore, says the Rambam, if a goy, if a non-Jew would come and try to force a Jew, laver al achas mikol mitzvahs ha'amuras b'tora o yahargenu, yavar v'lo yaharag, you should violate the Aveira. So if he comes and says, eat non-kosher food, you should eat the non-kosher food. If he says, be mechal Shabbos, be mechal Shabbos. Bamed Bar Mamurim, says the Rambam, when do we say that you should violate the Aveira and not allow yourself to give up your life? That is only Bishar Mitzvos. That is only by regular mitzvos, with the exception, the notable exception of Avodah Zarah, Gil Arayos, or Shvichas Damim. However, Al Shalosh Aveiros Elu Im Yomar Lo, if on any of these three he tells him, Avar alachas mehem o teharei, yaharei va'al yavar. Says the Rambam, by any of these three, you have to be willing to go even further and to give up one's life in order not to violate it. The Rambam writes in the next halacha as well, what if somebody decides, I am so kadosh, I'm so holy, and I'm so divine, I'm so close with the Ribono Shel Olam, you know, if somebody would come to me and say they want me to eat non-kosher food, I wouldn't be able to bring myself to do that, and I would just rather give up my life than to eat the non-kosher food? Do I have a right to make that decision, even though it's the wrong decision? But do I have a right to do it? Is the Gemara saying here that I'm not allowed to give up my life for any other Aveira? Or is the Gemara saying that I don't have to give up my life for any other Aveira? What would you say? What? So the Rambam writes explicitly that the Torah is making a clear distinction between these two categories. The only ones you're allowed to give up your life for are these three, and you have an obligation to give up for these three. But the rest of the mitzvahs HaTorah, we would say that even if you want to volunteer to give up your life, you don't have a right to do that. The Balei HaTosas disagree. Tosas says no. If somebody wants to be a chassid, somebody wants to be a very righteous, holy person, and they decide that they feel so sublime that they want to give up their life for any of the mitzvahs in the Torah, they're allowed to. All the Gemara is telling us here is that you must give up your life for these three, and it's not optional. But for everything else, it's optional. You can choose to give up your life, you can choose to violate the Aveira. That is a very fundamental machlokas between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosas, and we do not paskin like the Balei HaTosas. There's a fascinating kasha of the Maharil Diskin. The Balei HaTosas were 1,000 years ago. The Maharil Diskin was 100 years ago. So the Maharil Diskin was a very sharp mind, one of the Gedolim in Yerushalayim. He asked a question: how could Tosas say that I'm allowed to volunteer to give up my life to violate an Aveira, right? How can I do that? After all, he says, wouldn't that be Lifnei Iver? Think about that. Why should it be Lifnei Iver? Why should it be Lifnei Iver? Yeah? Okay, that's not what he says. Interesting point. Think about it more out of the box than what you're thinking. Even wilder suggestion. He says it's Lifnei Iver on the Nachri who's holding a gun to your head. Why? A Nachri comes to me and holds a gun to my head and says, eat this non-kosher sandwich or I'm going to kill you. Tosas says, I have a right to decide whether I want to give up my life or I want to eat the non-kosher sandwich. The choice that the Gemara says I'm allowed to do is eat the non-kosher sandwich. Tosas says, well, if I want to be a righteous person, I'm allowed to give up my life. But what do you mean, asked the Maharil Diskin? A non-Jew is then going to murder me, which didn't have to happen. I chose to be murdered. But the non-Jew is mitzvah on Ritzicha. So isn't that Lifnei Iver, that I'm setting up the non-Jew for failure by making him kill me instead of eating the non-kosher sandwich? That's a wild question of the Maharil Diskin. If you didn't get that, it's fine. We're going to go back to the scheduled program. But that's a fascinating kasha that I always find to be very sharp. Anyway, we paskin like the Rambam, which is that if somebody is threatened for any of the other mitzvahs HaTorah outside of these three, you are not allowed to give up your life. You cannot volunteer to do so. So much so, the Magen Avraham writes in the beginning of Hilchos Refuah B'Shabbos, Siman Shin Chav Ches, the Magen Avraham says, let's say you have a chole sheyesh bo sakana. Let's say you have somebody who's sick, and the doctors tell them they have to eat, and they have to eat a certain kind of food that's going to give them protein, nutrition, and that food happens to be non-kosher. And the doctors say, listen, if you don't eat this, you're going to die. And the person says, well, I've never taken non-kosher food into my system. I'm not going to accept it now. And I would prefer to die than to eat the non-kosher food. Says the Magen Avraham, you don't have a right to do that, and we would force you to eat the non-kosher food. Now again, it's not so easy to force somebody to eat anything, but still, in theory, says the Magen Avraham, you don't have a right to take that choice. As the Radvaz writes, Hanafashos li heina. Your nefesh, your life, is really in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not yours to make a decision whether you want to live life or not. None of us are allowed to make a choice to commit suicide at any point in our lives. Even if life is painful, and even if it's difficult, and even if things are very, very upsetting, you're not allowed to make that choice. Now, that shouldn't mean that we judge someone who does take their lives by suicide. That's not what it means. Somebody can have a psychiatric illness or whatever it is that happens to them, and that's not our decision to be made. But for ourselves, it's very clear. You're not allowed to take your own life because the Pasuk says, Hanafashos li heina. The Radvaz writes a very upsetting story. The Radvaz was one of the Rishonim, and he writes about one of the earlier Balei HaTosas, the Riva, who was instructed that he had to eat on Yom Kippur because he was very frail and he was very sick. And the Riva made an estimation for himself that he didn't have to listen to the doctors, and he fasted on Yom Kippur and he died. And the Radvaz quotes that story, and he struggles with it. How do we understand it? After all, we know, we paskin like the Rambam, who says, you are not allowed to volunteer to give up your life for anything outside of these three exceptions that the Gemara says. So be it as it may, that's the general rule. However, there are some specific exceptions, as we mentioned. Any of those three. Are there any other exceptions? The Rambam says, Another exception would be, for example, if you look here at number Gimel, if you live Bishas Hashmat, which means if there has been a decree that has been put out against the Jewish people that they're not allowed to perform any mitzvahs. So in such a case, that's not an individual that comes to me and threatens my life, but that is on a local or national scale where the entire community has been put against the Shmad, Kinevuchadnezzar v'chaveirav, where they make a gzeira against the Jewish people and they say, you're not allowed to observe Shabbos, or you're not allowed to observe Kashrus, or you can't do this, or you can't do that. In such a case, says the Rambam, then we would say that even if it's one of the other mitzvahs outside of this category, you have to make sure that you stick up for your principles and you are willing to give up your life. And the Ran, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, struggles with that. Why should that be the case? Why should a Shas HaShmad be any different? Why should there be a distinction between, on a one-off basis, on an individual level, if somebody comes and threatens my life, I'm not allowed to volunteer to give up my life, whereas when you have a Shas HaShmad, which is against the entire community, that an edict was put out against the Jewish people, why would I then have an obligation to give up my life, even for Kashrus, or even for Shabbos? Why should that be the case? And the Ran comes to the following conclusion, and he says as follows. When we as a nation are being threatened, when we as a people have decrees and edicts that are coming out against us, in such cases, the Ran says, Tzarich lasos chizuk negdan shalalakayim achshavtam. When we are being threatened, we need to double our efforts. We need to reinforce our beliefs. And therefore, he says, we double down. And even though we normally would not be obligated to give up our lives for Shabbos, but when Shabbos is being threatened for the entire community, we're going to stand up and say, Shabbos is what keeps us going, and we are not going to compromise at all. And that's the way the Ran explains this exception that the Rambam writes, that when you live through Rachmana Litzlan Shas HaShmad, we would have to make sure to give up our lives for any of the mitzvahs of Torah, not just the exceptions that are mentioned in the Gemara. Another exceptional circumstance would be one that is mentioned in the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef says, if somebody is an Adam Gadol, I don't think it means if somebody is a Gadol B'Yisrael. I think it means if somebody is a person who is extremely well-respected and people are going to look to you for guidance and people are watching what's happening, says the Beis Yosef, quoting from earlier Rishonim, he says, if he's an Adam Gadol V'Chasid V'Yari Shamayim, and he feels that Hadar Paretz Bekach, in such a case, the person should give up their lives because you're making a statement. And it's worth it to make that statement because other people are going to carefully watch and observe you, and they're going to understand that this is something that is so vitally important to the Jewish people that even this very distinguished personality was willing to give up their lives for that. Okay, so that's the basic, very brief overview of that discussion, which is, under which circumstances is somebody supposed to give up their lives, and perhaps when is one not obligated or not permitted to do so. Now we get into the more difficult, and I would say much more sensitive part of the discussion, which I think is very important nonetheless. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not passing judgment on whether someone is a kadosh or not. The Ribono Shel Olam will decide. I have no idea. This is just a discussion in theory about the sources that talk about this. So, what's interesting about everything that we mentioned until now, if you look in the Gemara and if you look in the Rishonim, every case that they mention is talking about a situation where somebody was forced and given a choice to do X or Y, right? Somebody was approached by a Nachri, and the Nachri said to him, either violate Shabbos or I'm going to kill you. And you made an active choice to either violate Shabbos or take your life. Somebody was given a choice, either serve Avodah Zarah or I'm going to kill you. You make that choice. That is the Kiddush Hashem. To make a choice not to serve Avodah Zarah and to be willing to give up my life, that we assume is clear in the Gemara, that would be a Kiddush Hashem. The question then becomes, what about someone who did not have a choice? Somebody who was simply intimidated, but was given no alternative, had no liberty to make a choice, let's say in the Shoah. They didn't ask people whether they observe mitzvos. They didn't ask people, do you observe Shabbos? Either observe Shabbos or we're going to kill you. They did not say, either renounce your Judaism or we're going to kill you. They killed them anyway. And even if someone was a self-hating Jew, even if somebody was never a Shomer Torah Mitzvah at all, even if somebody was never proud of their Jewish identity, they killed them anyway if they found out that their origins were Jewish. And they had records, as we know. You go to the Holocaust Museum, Yad Vashem, you can see it. They had records that were so clear about the origins of every family, and they tracked down every Jew, even if somebody was hiding, even if somebody seemed not to be Jewish at all, and even if they had no Jewish practices, every Jew is included without a choice. That's where the question becomes, is that considered to be part of this discussion of Kiddush Hashem, or perhaps not? Now, what's interesting is, the Shulchan Aruch talks about the following. Shulchan Aruch writes, if you have a mumer, let's say you have somebody who is totally anti-religious, right? Somebody who's totally anti-religious. Let's just say for a moment, a mumer la avodas kol chavmi, says. You have somebody who serves avodah zarah, not just anti-religious, somebody who actually converted to Catholicism. Now, it doesn't actually work. A Jew is a Jew forever. But somebody who actually went to the other side, does not identify as a Jew at all, and now he passes away. Would his family observe Shiva for him or not? What would you say? Says the Shulchan Aruch, in general, Ein Mesablan Alav. We don't bury that person in a Jewish cemetery. The family does not observe Avelus on that individual either. Total outcast from the Jewish community, and they should just go on with life as usual. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. However, says the Shulchan Aruch, V'yeshomrim, Shemumar Shanerag Bidei Ovdei Kochavim. Let's say that individual who is a non-shomer Torah mitzvahs. Not just a non-shomer Torah mitzvahs has no Jewish identity. Not just that no Jewish identity, has renounced his Jewish identity, has gone over to the other side and converted to Catholicism. Let's say you have that person and then ultimately he was killed by a non-Jew because he is Jewish. They dug up his origins, they found out where he's from. Says the Shulchan Aruch, in such a case, Misablim Alav. And the Shulchan Aruch writes later, we would say Kaddish for such a person. Even though he lived his whole life without any of the values that represent Judaism, and he was antithetical to all the principles of Jewish life, still we would say that that person, if he dies because a Nachri took his life for being a Jew, we would then be misabel on him, and we would recite Kaddish for him as well. You see already in the Shulchan Aruch that there is some kind of distinction that is drawn between one who dies naturally and dies as a converted Jew, you know, to Catholicism, or one who dies because a Nachri came along and took his life for him being Jewish, that is already considered to be a little bit of a different status. That's what's clear in the Shulchan Aruch already. Yeah. Even if what?
Like, meaning it's clearly that there's a distinction between that he's in a different category.
Right. No, that all I'm bringing out so far is that he's in a different category. Right? That we treat him differently than we would otherwise have treated him. Where that takes us, we're going to see in a second. What I find extremely painful is if you read some of the accounts of the survivors of the Shoah, who actually went through all of the harrowing, unspeakable experiences that they did, they actually had discussions among themselves. Are we going to be considered Kedoshim or not? It's like shocking when you hear about this. This is what they were talking about amongst themselves. They weren't talking about their children. I mean, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But what's recorded is that they had conversations about, what is our status going to be? We weren't given a choice. We were thrown into a ghetto. We were put into a gas chamber. We weren't asked whether we want to remain Jewish or not. If we would have been given the choice, I don't know what I would say, but I wasn't given the choice. I was thrown into the gas chamber with or without my own agreement. And they were discussing among each other whether or not they felt that this is something that warrants them getting this title of being someone who died al Kiddush Hashem. I find that to be just absolutely amazing. I mean, painfully amazing, but amazing nonetheless, that this was a major debate among the notable leaders of the community in the times of the Shoah. So, in one of the Svarim, it's called Ha'amidah B'chaye Yom Yom B'Ghettos Amachanos. In that book, which is basically an accounting of many of the things that happened in the ghettos, he writes as follows. Let's look here. If you look in number Dalit. Lo achas nish'elas b'ghettos ha'she'ela. It wasn't only once, on one occasion, that we had the following discussion in the ghetto. Ha'halicha la'maves b'dei ha'germanim. If we are going to be killed by the Germans, ha'im yesh b'kach kiddush Hashem, is that considered to be even Igdashti b'sof b'nei Yisrael? And again, this is somebody who was in the camps writing himself about what he was talking to his neighbors about. Nobody gave us a choice. Nobody gave me a choice. If I'm given a choice and I choose to say I love God more than I'm willing to listen to you, that's a Kiddush Hashem. But here I wasn't given a choice. Does that automatically brand me as a Kiddush Hashem just because my life was taken? Hein hamaras hadas lo haya ba kedei lahatzil asamumer mimabes v'mumrim huvalu kishar Yehudim legetos hamachanos. Nobody drew a distinction in the camps between those who were part of a religious community and those who were not. Nobody said, oh, you've been living a life of Jewish identity and therefore you're better or you're worse. That's not the way it was. You're Jewish, you belong in the ghetto. You're Jewish, you belong in the gas chamber. That's what we were all told together. Yachad im ne'emanei das Yisrael. Nobody drew a distinction between the leaders of the Jewish community and anybody else. Everyone was in the same boat. And therefore he says, maybe that would not be considered dying on Kiddush Hashem because I was not given the choice to decide whether I want to give my life or not. It's like amazing that this is what was going through their minds. One of the great Rabbanim in Poland before the war was Reb Moshe Yehoshua Aronson. There's a lot of stories about him and the diary that he kept and things that he wrote. He actually survived the war somehow. I forgot his exact story, but he did survive. And he writes the same thing. Ha'uvdahi ki af ki hanatzim lachamu b'sina sitnis lo ra keneged ha'yehudim elagam keneged kol devar yadus. They weren't just fighting against the Jews. They were fighting against Judaism. Aval, bottom line, he says, heim lo gazru lavar al hadas. Bottom line, says Rabbi Aronson, they didn't make specific decrees against Shabbos. They didn't make a decree against Yom Tov or against Yom Kippur. They just said, Jews have to be eradicated. We hate the Jews. Not we hate the mitzvahs that the Jews do. And therefore he says, heim lo nasnu la Yehudim breira lavar al das lihinatzel. They did not give Jews a choice to either violate the laws of the Torah and be saved, or continue on being Jewish and die. O lehachzik b'dasar deharei, heim bachru b'kav shel chisul shitati lechol ish Yehuda yechona. They wanted complete and utter destruction of every single Jew, regardless of their affiliation or not. Hasheilahi, the question is, im Yehudi shahumas avor avur hayosu Yehudi, if a Jew who is killed only because he's a Jew, Hainu mikadesh Hashem b'misaso, am I called a Kiddush Hashem when my life is taken just because I was taken for being a Jew? Enter in Nova Festival, right? My life was not taken because somebody came and said that I'm observant or not, or I should choose whether I love God or I don't. My life was taken because I was a Jew. Is that something that automatically deems an individual as being a kadosh? Or perhaps not. That's the question that he asks about his own generation. Again, he was in the camps. Shelos Elu, look what he writes. These questions, Nikru b'mochi lalo heref. You know what that means? You know when you have something, you can't get it out of your mind? You're just very agitated about something? You dated a guy, such a bad comparison. No, sorry. That was very insensitive. She'elos elu nikru b'mochi lelo heref. He says, these things were such overwhelming feelings, I couldn't get them out of my head. This is what I obsessed over all day. Od be'yosi be'geit salmaves. When I was there, be'machnos hamaves, Auschwitz and Buchenwald. When I was in Auschwitz and in Buchenwald, this is what overwhelmed me all day. And I just kept playing out the scenario in my head. If I'm going to die al Kiddush Hashem here in Auschwitz, am I going to have the opportunity to go down in history as a kadosh, or perhaps not? L'chora, ha-gemaras kulan, mechein rabbeseinu ha-rishonim, einam danim, ela bigoy ha-ones lavar al-hadas. All the cases that the Gemara describes are ones where I'm given a choice, or I'm forced to do this because of a mitzvah or avera that they want me to violate. But that's not my situation. Here, they're killing me and all of my friends and my neighborhood because they hate the Jews. Not because they hate the mitzvahs that we do, not because they hate our God, but because they hate us. Is that considered to be part of the same category or not? He comes to the following conclusion. Avo b'makom shahagoy mis'ane l'shem Yehudi. When you have a situation where they are repulsed by the concept of the Jews, ve'etzam ha-musag yados hu shemafrialo, and just the notion of being a Jew is what bothers them, ha-reze nikra mumis al-kiddush Hashem, he says it has to be that that's called dying al-kiddush Hashem. Why? Because the reason why they're targeting the Jews is because, why are they targeting the Jews? Why are they targeting the Jews? Think about it. Why are they targeting the Jews today? Because the Jews represent the Ribono Shelo. And they hate the Ribono Shelo. The conclusion that he comes to is, if we are referred to as the Am HaNivchar, if we are called Ata Echad, V'Shimcha Echad, Umi Ka'amcha Yisrael Goy Echad Ba'aretz, if we are the ones who we say, Ata V'chartana Mikal Ha'amin, Ahavto Esanu V'ratzi Savanu, if we believe that we are the chosen people, and if that's the understanding with which we lead our lives, the world knows it as well, that we represent the Ribono Shel Olam. When they hate us, when they kill us, it's because they hate the Ribono Shel Olam. It's not because they hate Israel. It's not because they hate the Jews. They hate the Ribono Shel Olam. And therefore, says Rabbi Aaronson, his conclusion is, of course we are considered to be Kedoshim, because we are representatives. We are the embodiment of God in the world. Hitler himself wrote that in Mein Kampf. The Jews are the conscience of the world, right? Because we stand for values that are represented by the Torah itself. We are the conscience of the world. He's right. We should be the conscience of the world. Because we live a different set of rules, a different kind of life than everyone else. And that can be very uncomfortable for people. So, says Rabbi Aaronson, his conclusion was, when he was there, that it must be that we are all considered to be Kedoshim, because in the end of the day, they're not killing me because they hate me. They're killing me because they hate God. And if they're trying to eradicate God from the world, then that means anyone who represents Him and dies for that cause is a representation of Kiddush Hashem. That's what it is. And therefore, he said, that is the way he had concluded on his own. One of the other great Gedolim in Europe at the time, in Poland, was the Rav in Warsaw. His name was Rabbi Nachum Zemba. It's a lot to talk about Rabbi Nachum Zemba. He was an unbelievable Talmud Chacham. He was also a banker. He was in finance and he did everything. He was killed in the Shoah in 1943. And in the diary of the Warsaw Ghetto, he writes the following: Yesh drachim shonos the Kiddush Hashem. Inu ichricho kayom es hayehudim l'shmad, if they would have forced the Jewish people to convert, we could have been like in the Spanish Inquisition. You had a choice to become a Marano. You had a choice to do this, choice to do that. People were making choices. And then that would be a Kiddush Hashem, to give up my life and not to serve Avodah Zarah. However, he says, here, is that really the situation? He then quotes a Rambam and he says, Afilu Yehudi shenerag mishimshu Yehudi hareza atzmo Kiddush Hashem v'halacha kidvar. He quotes a Rambam, which is not clear exactly where that Rambam actually is, but he says, the Rambam says that if somebody gives up his life just for being a Jew, he is considered to be somebody in the category of a Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Now the truth is, the Rambam has a very interesting letter in the Igeres HaShmad. Anybody knows what the Igeres HaShmad is? No? The Rambam wrote a letter called the Igeres HaShmad. It's also referred to as the Maimer Kiddush Hashem, where the Rambam basically wrote to the Jews in Spain and Morocco who were being forced to convert to Islam. And huge portions of the community all converted to Islam. And the Rambam wrote a letter of chizuk to the community that they shouldn't feel bad. That yes, you can still do tshuva. And the Rambam wrote that there's still a way out and you shouldn't feel that now that you have done this, you have been forsaken by the Ribono Shel Olam. There was somebody who came and said that they can never do tshuva, and the Rambam basically attacks him and says, how can you say such a thing? The Rambam was trying to encourage all of these Jews in that time that they shouldn't feel that because they made a choice not to give up their lives al Kiddush Hashem, that therefore they are, therefore they are out. So the Rambam writes as follows. Look at the Yeretz Hashmat. V'ish, she'izakeyu akel lalos b'mayla elyona kazos, kelomar, she'nerag al Kiddush Hashem. Let's say you have a Jew whose life is given up al Kiddush Hashem. Afilu haya avanosav kamo yiravam benavad v'chaveirav, says the Rambam. Even if that Jew lived his whole life until the last second, he lived his whole life like Yiravam benavad. Now, who is Yiravam benavad? He's known in infamy as one of the worst Jews that ever lived. Yiravam benavad, the Mishnah says in Maseches Sanhedrin, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba. Every Jew has a portion in the world to come, except for very few people, less than 10. One of them is Yerava Menevat. Why? What did he do? Says the Gemara. He was a chote umachti asarabim. When he took over the mantle of leadership, when he became the king of the Jewish people, he shut down the roads to Yerushalayim. He built Avodah Zarah in Beit El and in Shevet Dan. He made everybody reroute. Instead of going to do Aliyah L'Regel in Yerushalayim, he made them go to these houses of worship that were serving Avodah Zarah. He made every Jew be a part of his efforts. He was a choti amachti asarabim. And therefore the Gemara says that Yerava Menevat goes down in infamy as one of those people who does not have Olam Haba. In fact, there's a very interesting story the Gemara tells that on one occasion, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Yerava Menevat and he says, Do tshuva, chazar bach. And Yeravam says, really, what does that mean? Hashem says, if you do tshuva, aniva atan etayl b'Gan Eden. We're going to take a nice walk in Gan Eden if you do tshuva. Wow, sounds very enticing. Yeravam says to him, and who's going to be there? Just the two of us? He says, no, Ben Yishai is also going to be there. Who's Ben Yishai? What? David, right. Who's going to be there? Me, you, and David HaMelech. Wow, it's pretty amazing. My whole life, I'm serving Avodah Zarah. I'm a machti asaravim. I'm encouraging the Jewish people to serve Avodah Zarah. Terrible, terrible aveiros. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me an option. Do tshuva. And me, you, and David HaMelech are going to take a walk together in the park of Gan Eden. Sounds wonderful. Nu, if you were Yeravam. Chalila, if you were Yeravam, would you take the offer or not? God came to you directly, has a conversation. Not like, maybe we'll accept you tshuva. It's, I'm telling you, do tshuva, and I will take you back, and we'll take a walk in Gan Eden. You ready to come? I think anybody would say yes. So what's Yeravam's question? What does Yeravam say? Anybody know? Yeravam responds, sounds like a nice offer, but me, Barosh, who's going to walk first? Is it going to be like, what's the line going to look like? It's going to be you, David, and then me behind? It's going to be me, you, and then David? Or it's going to be you, me, and then David behind me? Like, who's going first? That was his question. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yeah, you're going to be there. It's just going to be the three of us. But you're going to be behind David HaMelech. Yerubim says, you know, forget it. Forget it. If I'm not going to be as important as I should be, then I'm not listening, I'm not interested, and he gives up on his opportunity to do tshuva. That's the Gemara story about Yerava Menevah. So he was a Rasha Marusha. He was an evil person. And yet the Rambam writes in his Igeres Shmad, Afilu hayava nosav kama Yerava Menevah. Even if you have a terrible history of being someone who lived life like Yerava Menevah, and then your life is taken by a Nachri who comes and forces you to do something, Harehu me'olam haba, v'afilu lo hayatam al chacham. He says, you are considered to be me'olam haba. And on such a person, says the Rambam, it says, that ein kol beria yachola lamod b'mechitzasam. There's a wild discussion in the Tshuva Sam Sofer. He writes the following in Yerudeya. There's an interesting tshuva. He says, this happened Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parsha Shoftim. So I guess they used to have summer vacation there also. Shnas Tafkuf Ayin Aleph. I don't know which year that is in English. Someone can look it up. So that's when this happened. Hevi Lukan, they brought in front of me the following question. Who? What year?
I didn't write down.
Tafkuf Ayin Aleph. Okay. Hevi Lukan, computer science major. Unbelievable. Okay, Heviu Lakan Ish Kadosh Hanerag Bidei Akum. It's good to lighten the mood a little when we're talking about such serious things. What? 1811. Thank you. So the Chasam Sofer writes the following. He says, Heviu Lakan. They brought me the following question: Ish Kadosh Hanerag Bidei Akum. They brought someone who was killed by a non-Jewish murderer. V'nikvar b'yom Aleph Shel Achrav. Is there an eclipse happening again? V'nikvar b'yom echad shel acharav. And then he was brought, after he was killed, they were nice enough to give his body over to the Jewish community that they were allowed to bury him. And here's the story. He says, Hayos ki ziknei v'rashei hachever kadisha haya b'shuk. They were all somewhere shopping. All the chever kadisha senior members were shopping. And they left all the junior members behind, right? What happens in a shul in the summer? The rabbi goes away, the young rabbi has to stay behind. That's the way it goes. So the Chevra Kadisha junior members stay behind in the summer, and says the Chasam Sofer, Hanish'arim po einam bekiyim b'minhagei Chevra Kadisha. And these young members of the Chevra Kadisha didn't know the rules, they don't know the practices of the Chevra Kadisha, so they came to me with the following question. They wanted to know, should we bury this person together with the rest of the members of his family who are already in the cemetery, his grandparents and everybody else, which would make sense, or should we not allow him access or entry into the cemetery? What? Why should we not allow him in? We always allow the Jews into the cemetery. Why should we not allow this person to be buried? So what do you say, Yaffa? Why should we not allow him? What did he do wrong? So they came up with the following idea. They said, we shouldn't bury him because obviously if he was killed, it must be that he deserved to be killed. He must have been really a terrible Russia. Otherwise, God would never have allowed that to happen to him. Now, normally the halacha is we don't bury a Russia next to a tzaddik. So why should we bury this person? Maybe we should have a separate section in the cemetery off to the side where this terrible, evil Russia is going to be buried by himself. After all, God would never have allowed him to be killed by the non-Jews if he didn't deserve it. Must be he's a terrible person. He deserved to be killed like that. And therefore, he doesn't deserve to be buried in the cemetery. Luckily enough, they came to the Chasam Sofer to ask the question without deciding on their own what the answer should be. And the Chasam Sofer is shocked by the question, and he says that he thinks this is a terrible question. Me'iti lo teitze hora kazos. He said, I would never allow them to go through with such a plan. Ela yikruvu b'kirvei avosa l'fichvodo harai lo. He says, this person is a kadosh. This person is considered to be extremely holy. He died al kiddush Hashem. What do you mean? You're going to decide that the reason why he was killed is because he may have done X or he may have done Y? Who are you to decide that? You don't know what the reason, what the cheshbon shamayim is. Who dies and who doesn't, who's killed and how they're killed and when they're killed and by who and by when. That doesn't make sense, says the Chasam Sofer. Therefore, he refused to accept the suggestion of the junior Chevra Kadisha members. And he said, we're going to bury him just like anyone else who deserves to have a right burial plot in the cemetery. Now, it's very interesting that you may ask, what is the difference whether someone is considered to be a kadosh or not? Like, it's not our problem. That's for God to figure out where they should be in Olam Haba, where they should be in Gan Eden. Should they be in Kodesh Kadoshim under the Kisei HaKavod, or should they be in the bleachers like the rest of us are going to be? I don't know, right? That's the question. But that's not our question. So what does it really matter? What's this whole discussion about? What's the difference? And the answer to that is, if you look in the Maharil, in his Tshuvas, the Maharil is one of the great Gedolim and Chachmei Ashkenaz in the end of the 1300s, the Maharil writes that if somebody dies al Kiddush Hashem, there may not be any reason to say Kaddish for them. You know that a couple of months ago, there was a big initiative that was started in Israel called Kaddish L'chol Kadosh. You heard about this? There were so many people who were killed on October 7th. Many of them did not have relatives that survived. Many of them did not have relatives who are religious. And somebody in the religious community in Israel decided, wouldn't it be nice if Jews around the world took upon themselves to say Kaddish for each of the 1,400 people who were killed on that day? Right? So this was a big discussion. At the time, right after October 7th, I discussed it with my father. He said, I don't have any objection to say Kaddish is beautiful. It's a very nice thing to do. But he said, personally, he didn't want to sign on to it. Like they were asking for a signature. He said he didn't want to sign on because he said, personally, I'm not sure we need to say Kaddish for them. Somebody who dies on Kiddush Hashem is a Kaddush. The whole reason why we say Kaddish, why do we say Kaddish for someone who passes away? That their neshama can have an aliyah, that they shouldn't have as difficult a gehenim as they otherwise would have had, and the more wonderful things that we do in their merit, the more that they will have an aliyah and neshama and not have to suffer in gehenim because of whatever they may or may not have done in their lifetime. These people who died al Kiddush Hashem, the question is, do they actually require Kaddish to be recited for them? So yes, they may have been Mechalel Shabbos their whole lives, and they may never have done anything right as they should. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But right now, they died al Kiddush Hashem. Is Kaddish really necessary? Is it required for them? My father said he wasn't sure of that, and he wasn't willing to sign on, because you're basically saying, I believe that someone who dies al Kiddush Hashem still needs Kaddish. I'm not sure. I don't know that he needs a kapar. You know that a child says Kaddish for a parent for the first year, right? Why do we say it for the first year? We say it for the first year because the assumption is the maximum Gehenim somebody could get for whatever they may have done in their life is 12 months. So we want to give the parents an extra schus every day of the 12 months that they shouldn't have to suffer. If they are suffering, they shouldn't have to suffer. So why do we stop when one says kaddish for a parent? Why do we stop after 11 months? We don't do it the 12th month. Why? The reason is because that would be an awful condemnation of our parents. That would be a declaration by saying, my parent was such an evil person, I believe that they are going to get the maximum sentence of Gehenna for 12 months, and they need my help for the entire duration of that period as well. That would be a tremendous lack of confidence in what our parents did in their own lifetime. And therefore, we limit it. We say, we're going to do whatever we can for our parents, but we're going to stop after 11 months in order that we shouldn't declare our parents are being Rishayim Gemurim as being evil people who deserve to be punished for 12 months again, and that is why we stop. So the Ma'aril discusses whether or not we should assume that Kaddish needs to be recited. There was another discussion in the Arzaruah, fascinating. What's the halacha? Let's say a woman loses her husband. Whatever, he got sick, he died. Is she allowed to get remarried after he passes away? What's the halacha? Of course. Why not? Why shouldn't she be allowed to? Is there anybody in the Jewish community who, if her husband dies, would not be allowed to get remarried? And it's not, we're not sure if he died. Talking about, we watched him die, we buried him. And yet, she's not allowed to get married. Anybody know who that is? So the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin talks about whether an Eishes Melech, if you're married to the king, who are you going to marry after that? It's all downhill afterward. You're going to get someone who's subpar, you're going to get someone who's not a king? So it says, out of kavod to the melech, after the queen is left without her husband, the queen is not allowed to get remarried unless it's someone who is, you know, either the same degree of importance as her husband or greater. But since that's almost impossible to find, basically she's not allowed to get remarried. Out of respect to the melech, we say once his almana is an almana, she has to remain an almana for the rest of her life. That's the halacha. Okay, along comes the Arzaruah, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim in the 1300s, and he says, what's the halacha by someone who died al Kiddush Hashem? What's their status? What's the status of that woman whose husband died al Kiddush Hashem? Now, we know that the minig is not so. We know that in Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately, a chayal dies al Kiddush Hashem, fighting for the Jewish people. Unfortunately, leaves behind the young wife at the right time when she's prepared to do so. Of course, she gets remarried. We know that that's the halacha, but the Arzaruah, just listen so that we understand and appreciate a little bit of how seriously the Rishonim take this issue. So the Arzaruah writes, he believes that out of kavod to the person who was killed, al Kiddush Hashem, he is in such a league of his own, just like a Melech Yisrael is in a league of his own and his wife is not allowed to get remarried after he passes away. So too, if you have somebody who is killed, al Kiddush Hashem, his wife, lo tinase olamis, his wife is never allowed to get remarried because we assume that out of respect to the person who gave his life, al Kiddush Hashem, she has to remain a widow for the rest of her life because there's nobody who can top the greatness of her husband. What an amazing sentiment. It gives us a little bit of a perspective of how the Rishonim see what is their view of somebody who dies al Kiddush Hashem. It's amazing. So that's the big discussion. So there are different points along the way where we find that there is practical ramifications to whether someone is considered to be a kadosh or perhaps not. The bottom line is, we say a pasuk in Tehillim, ki doresh damim osam zachar. We don't have enough time to go through it, but we're told, lo shachach tzakas anavim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to forget the screams of those who anavim are the humble people who cried as they gave their lives al Kiddush Hashem. The Ribbono Shel Olam is keeping account of everything that's going on, of all that has happened, of all that unfortunately has happened in previous generations and in ours as well. And lo shachach tzakas anavim. I was actually asked a question the other day. I think it's very, very interesting. I was asked a similar question, but Rabbi Avadya Yosef has a tshuva where he wants to know the following. Chayal tzahal, if you have a soldier in the Israeli army, but he's a Druze. Shenerag bidei ha'aravim ha'yishme'elim. A Druze soldier who gets killed in battle, fighting for the Jewish people. Al mishmeres bitachon Yisrael. And he gets killed because he was trying to help defend the Jewish people. Ha'im yecholim lomar hashkava bebeis ha'knesses le'ilu nishmaso. Are we allowed to say a kel male for him in shul even though he's a Druze. On the one hand, he's not a Jew. On the other hand, he gave his life fighting for the Jewish people. So how would we view that? Fascinating question. So he writes, number one, Hadruze ma'aminim be'el echad. He says, number one, do you believe that a Druze is considered to be an Oved of a Dezara? The Shulchan Aruch says you're not supposed to be mispalo for an Oved Avodah Zarah. However, here he says the Druzim are not considered to be Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They believe in one God. Einam Ovdei Avodah Zarah klal v'gam ma'aminim b'hasharas ha'nefesh. I don't know anything about their beliefs, but I guess Rav Avadia looked into it, and he said that the Druze community believes in hasharas ha'nefesh, which means they believe in the afterlife. V'lo od ela she'em misgaisim l'tzavaha ganal Yisrael l'mosrim esnafshem ala ganas toshvei medinas Yisrael. And they are willing to give their lives al kiddush Hashem. V'shomim al sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach. Therefore, he says, dinam ki chasidim u'masei olam. And he quotes the Sefer Chasidim. The Sefer Chasidim writes, Nachri sha'asa tovas l'Yisrael. If you have a non-Jew who does good things for the Jewish people, yecholim lasos lo hashkaba u'levakish me'akadosh baruch hu she'yakal b'dino. I don't know. Let's say you have a janitor in a shul for 25 years, and then he passes away. Would we make a kel mele in the shul in memory of this person who helped us genuinely, sincerely for 25 years? Mechasidei umasei olam. He quotes a Sefer Chasidim that writes, yes. And he brings a proof to it from a Yerushalmi. Anybody knows Charvona? Who was Charvona? We all say Charvona in the story of Megillas Esther. Who was Charvona? What? Oh, so Charvona, we say, V'gam Charvona Zachar Latov. That's what we say in Shoshana Siakha. Charvona is remembered for good. Why? Because, he helped out a little bit. Did he do anything major in the story? Nothing major. But he helped out a little bit. He helped out in some way, and therefore he's remembered for the good. He said, the Yerushalmi writes, Charvona should be remembered for good because he helped out the Jewish people. If the Yerushalmi is no problem from the time of the Purim story until today, to keep remembering about Charvona, we shouldn't remember the Druze soldier who fought on behalf of the Jewish people, who gave his life for them. We should remember that individual as well. And he says, therefore he feels that that would be a legitimate thing to do, and I find that to be a very important tshuva, a very interesting tshuva, where he says it would be the appropriate thing to do and a legitimate thing to do to make a kel mele in the shul for them. After October 7th, there was a big discussion. There were communities that wanted to have big Mishnayos learning programs on behalf of each of the people who were killed. But many of the people who were killed were security guards who were Druze. They were members of the Israeli army who were not Jewish, or I don't know exactly what faith they were from, but a bunch of different faiths. And there was a question, should we be learning Mishnayos on behalf of people who aren't Jewish and have nothing to do with Mishnah? The reason why we learn Mishnayos is because Mishnah is the same letters as Neshama. And we assume that that's an Aliyas HaNeshama. So do we need to give an Aliyas HaNeshama? Are we supposed to give an Aliyas HaNeshama? I find that to be a very, very interesting issue. But as we think about current events and all the Kedoshim that unfortunately have left our people over the last 6 or 7 months, and we think back to previous generations when they had similar kinds of very, very difficult and unfortunate experiences, we remind ourselves that this was something that really overwhelmed the minds of Jews who were living through it, as to whether or not they are going to go down in history as being considered Kedoshim, or perhaps they are just considered to be regular Jews who died, and that would be a devastating blow to them. That was something that really consumed the minds of some of those who lived through the Holocaust, some of those who died in the Holocaust as well, and it's something that I think is a very interesting and important area of focus to think about, especially at this time of the year. Okay.